Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. There have been some encouraging signs. Rob, I don't know if you've noticed this or not. I'm starting to sound more and more like myself. I'm getting back to 100%, which is very exciting news. The draft is right around the corner. I mean, we are 1 week away from the landing at Liberty, giving you guys a chance to win almost $1,000. You also got a chance to win a Jawan Taylor game used, 2 false starts, and a holding penalty helmet. There is so much that is happening. I'm very excited to be here. Rob is also excited to be here. You guys know how during the college basketball season, Rob and I couldn't get on the same page about what team to cheer for, so we agreed to cheer for the K-State women's team. They made it to the Sweet 16. We did that. I have agreed to cheer for the Kansas baseball team. So I was scrolling the interwebs a couple of days ago, and on Baseball America, they did their projections on who they think could make it to the College World Series. And one of the teams was the Kansas Jayhawks. Rob has told me they are not calling them the Jayhawks anymore. They're the Omahawks. So we are going to have their manager join us on the show coming up in about 40 minutes. Dan Fitzgerald is going to join us on the show. We have adopted the Kansas baseball team on this show. We need to support one baseball team that can score runs. We want to do that for the Royals. They are not making it easy for us. So I would like for the next, 45 days of the baseball season to be fun. I'm not sure if it's going to be fun over at Kauffman Stadium. It seems like it's fun in Lawrence. We have adopted them. So their manager will be on the show. Before we get to today's top story, I would like to ask you guys a couple of things. I would appreciate it if you listen to the show every day at 2 o'clock. Right here on 96.5 The Fan. I would also appreciate it if you would tell one friend about the show. You don't have to tell two friends about the show. That would be greedy. If you could just tell one person to check out the show, I would greatly appreciate it. Now, usually when I come here and sit down, I kind of scroll the text line just to get a tone of what's been going on for the day. Some days, Rob and I's name pop up on the text line, even though we didn't do anything. I try to make sure that Rob and I mind our own business. I don't bother the morning show. I don't bother the midday show. I try to focus on Drive business because ultimately that's all I control. And sometimes we get roped into other things, and that's fine. I haven't seen one person on the text line say, man, Carrington was right. Because just yesterday on this show, what did I lead with? Since paying Patrick Mahomes, they have drafted 8 skill position players with varying results. What I want to see the Chiefs do is continue to add weapons. I want to see them add a new running back. I want to see them add a new wide receiver. The text line kept telling me, offensive line, offensive line, offensive line. They ain't drafting no offensive line. Not as many as you think they will. But you know what they can do? They can improve at running back. They can improve at wide receiver and get more dynamic. You guys argue with me ad nauseum yesterday. Then Brett Veach steps up to the podium, and what does he say? The exact same thing that I said yesterday on this show that you were arguing with me about.
You're a few bad weeks away from having no depth at all. I mean, I know I've always said the story a few years back of that defensive end position where we had a 2 or 3 week span where we lost multiple guys. And, you know, last year, Pacheco got hurt early on. And I mean, we always want to surround Pat with playmakers. And, you know, the more talented wideouts you can throw on the field at one time is something important to us. And depth at running back. And look, this kickoff role too. I mean, ideally, you know, it would be advantageous for us to identify a receiver and or running back that has explosive playmaking ability on both ends. Remigio did a great job, but again, we're always pushing the envelope to get 1% better. And if we can add another dynamic element to both return phases, that would be something that would make sense. So it's not just wanting to continue to add explosive playmaking at the running back or the receiver position. It's also the return game.
What I desperately want for the Chiefs to do is to get younger and more explosive at the skill position, because that's where explosive plays come from. It's so refreshing to hear Brett Veach say everything that I've been saying this offseason. Now, it's one thing to say it, and I would argue that that's not what their offseason has looked like so far. But I have told you, I am not panicked. Because 1 week from now, they can start the process of answering some of these questions. A problem with the Chiefs offense last year is they didn't have a lot of explosiveness at running back. Well, coming up, guess what? Brett Veach, the general manager, the guys that you tell me that I should believe in, trust in Veach, guess what position he thinks is the deepest in this entire draft? Listen to this.
So the defensive line class in general is good. I think that's probably driven more so by the depth at D end. I think there's a lot of D ends, and I think that you know, running backs is certainly I think the deepest class in the draft. A close second would be D end. I think the interior defensive line numbers are I think better than most years, but I don't think they come anywhere close to the D-line depth and the corner depth. I think those two are just wow. I mean, you look at the board and those names go from top to bottom. Interior O-line is light. Corner, I think, is actually decent in the middle rounds. I think D-line is okay, but I don't think it's any more or less than any one particular. I think that where you're getting the big numbers from top to bottom are D-end and running back.
Oh, my goodness. I'm getting emotional. It's like Brett Veach has been listening to this show. I've always known that they listen. They've told me that they listen to this show. What have I been telling you guys for months now? They don't have to draft a running back in round one. I mean, I'd love for them to get Ashton Jeanty. That's not realistic. I'd love for them to get Omarion Hampton. I don't think that's realistic. This is as deep of a running back class that I can remember. There will be multiple Pro Bowlers. There will be multiple 1,000-yard rushers that are drafted on days 2 and days 3 of this year's NFL draft. Guys that you've heard of before. Devin Neal, DJ Giddens, the 2 very talented running backs that helped Ohio State win a national championship. Ollie Gordon, Cam Scataboo, guys you've heard of before. Take one of them. I just heard the general manager say that they're always pushing the envelope and that they want to give Patrick Mahomes as many weapons as possible on all phases. You have not done that at running back. You got a chance to fix it. Do it. That's it. That's all I've been saying. That's it. You guys don't know how rewarding it is to hear the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs agree with the stances that I've had on this show. That's what they need this offseason. If you were offensive line was their biggest issue, they've addressed your need. They went out and they signed Jalen Moore day one of free agency. You've been handled. You've been served. I haven't been in this offseason. They are no better at running back today than they were in the Eagles game. I don't know if they're better at wide receiver than they were. They got a chance to be better. Take one of them. That's it. Coming up, starting next Thursday, get better at those other positions. Get more dynamic. Get more explosive. That's how you help your quarterback. Last thing here. This isn't even a, I was right, you were right. I think we both were right about this one. That can happen. This isn't a you said anything wrong or I said anything wrong. This is just an admission of where we are. Here is Brett Veach. Their number one goal after the draft has to be to reach a long-term extension with Trey Smith because it will free them up to take care of other players that they need to pay.
We get that done. I mean, there's no lack of interest or will or desire on our end. And we did have, Pete, a ton of talk with Torrey and Jimmy, his agents at the Combine. Those conversations continued on to the owners' meetings. And so now also CAA has a ton of draft prospects, and they have a ton going on. So, you know, we've exchanged multiple phone calls, multiple emails, and, you know, my guess is once the draft's over and our focus is back on taking care of the players that are here and trying to get those guys locked up and CAA on their end. I mean, they have, again, they're one of the leading agencies in regards to the players they produce every year. So I'm sure once things settles down on both ends, we'll be in a position to continue this dialogue and hopefully make some progress there. But there's no secret there. We'd like to get Trey locked up.
That would be the best thing for the Chiefs to do. Sign Trey Smith to a long-term extension, which frees up some cap space, and take care of two positions at a very important positions of need. You have one of the best young corners in the National Football League. The clock is now ticking on what his contract is going to be. It will never get cheaper for Trent McDuffie. It will only get more expensive. Now, he is number one on my list. Maybe you want to pay George Karlaftis this offseason. Maybe George wants to bet on himself. He hasn't had that big, dynamic Max Crosby year that would make you want to give him a $100 million contract. So if you sign George Karlaftis now, I would say it would be him taking a little bit more of the sure thing and not being willing to gamble on himself. You can't tell him how to handle his business. If he doesn't want to gamble on himself, he doesn't have to gamble with himself. But you have drafted two starting caliber players, and one of them is an all-pro player at corner. You figure that contract out. You have another young pass rusher on your team. In fact, you only have one talented young pass rusher on your entire organization. That needs to be something that you prioritize this offseason, either finding another one, and he is telling you that he believes that DN is very deep in this draft class, and taking care of the one that you currently have who has shown you an ability to be able to get to the quarterback. We can take your phone calls on this, 913-586-7965. We are exactly 1 week away from round one of the NFL draft. It is so happy to hear that Brett Veach and I are on the exact same page about what is important heading into this draft. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, Rob, I want to bring you in for this. Bink is going to join us in about an hour and a half. We'll get his thoughts on what he heard from Brett Veach. I want to play this one more time in case you missed it. Brett Veach wants to see this team add more weapons at the skill position players, more specifically running back and wide receiver.
You're a few bad weeks away from having no depth at all. I mean, I know I've always said the story a few years back of that defensive end position where we had a 2 or 3 week span where we lost multiple guys. And, you know, last year, Pacheco got hurt early on. And I mean, we always want to surround Pat with playmakers. And, you know, the more talented wideouts you can throw on the field at one time is something important to us. And depth at running back. And look, this kickoff role too. I mean, ideally, you know, it would be advantageous for us to identify a receiver and or running back that has explosive playmaking ability on both ends. Remigio did a great job, but again, we're always pushing the envelope to get 1% better. And if we can add another dynamic element to both return phases, that would be something that would make sense. So it's not just wanting to continue to add explosive playmaking at the running back or the receiver position. It's also the return game.
All right, let's break this up into two parts, Rob. Let's talk about the first part, which is your favorite position, and talk about in running back. It is not a question to me anymore if the Chiefs are going to draft a running back. I don't think that you can look at their running back room. You as a general manager can then say, we believe that this group is the deepest in the entire draft, and then not leave with one of them. Now, I've never been very particular about where they need to select their running back. They're not taking one at 31. That's perfectly fine. We will then see how big of a need they think it is. Could they spend a second round pick on Judkins or Henderson out of Ohio State? I think there's a possibility. Could they in round three, especially because they have the Titans pick, could they take RJ Harvey, the very talented running back out of UCF? Could they take him in the third round? Could they take the couple of local kids, DJ Giddens and Devin Neal? Could they take them in the middle rounds? I'm not super particular about the where, but what I don't think they can do is wait to do what they did with Isaiah Pacheco, take one at pick two. No, you need to use, I would say, a premium pick for a player that is going to end up being a focal point of your offense. I understand that we have convinced ourselves that running back doesn't matter and they're interchangeable. We're talking about a player that you think is going to touch the ball somewhere between 250 and 300 times. So I don't mind spending the 66th overall pick on that kind of player or spending a late second round pick on a player that is going to touch the ball more than anybody else in our offense and getting who we deem to be a premium prospect. I'm cool with them spending a high pick on a running back. Rob, you are usually not fine with it. What do you make of Brett Veach's comments that he seems to understand that they have to do more than what they've gotten this last season from the running back room?
So two things can be true at once, Carrington. First and foremost, me and you actually on the same page here. Draft a running back. Like, I think there are, I don't know if it's Chiefs colored glasses or blinders or whatever last year with Chiefs fans and how Kareem Hunt performed. I think he was the definition of fine. You can easily upgrade from fine. Also, Isaiah Pacheco was solid, above fine when healthy, 2 years ago. He was not healthy last year. So let's add a running back. Me and you were on the same page there. Me and you are also on the same page. Not in the first round, not at pick 31, unless for some reason Ashton Jeanty has fallen, in which case I don't know what would have transpired in the world where he's at 31. But outside of that, I have no problem taking a running back. I have the ones I prefer. You probably have the ones you prefer, but they need a running back because they need to be in a position where when they break out of St. Joe, we and them and fans and Arrowhead Addict, whatever blog, should be having very difficult conversations of, hey, is one of these guys getting the axe because the rookie is so good? That is the best case scenario for the Chiefs, is that on August, whatever cut day is, September, whatever, everyone in Kansas City is talking about, hey, are they going to surprise cut Kareem Hunt? Maybe they let Elijah Mitchell go. Maybe they, you know, somehow they do something with, I don't know. But that's the situation they need to be in. So RJ Harvey, DJ Giddens, Devin Neal, Ollie Gordon, Trevion Henderson, Quashawn Judkins, pick a guy, But they need to be in a situation where they're breaking St. Joe. We are having conversations about, hey, what veteran is not making it to week one?
Sounds like you and I are on the same page about running back, and that's perfectly fine. We don't have to spend any more time talking about running back. I know that makes you uncomfortable. Let's now move to the other side of the ball and the other position that he addressed, which is talking about the D-end. He said that he believes the two deepest positions in this year's draft are running back and defensive end. I think the most important player heading into this draft is Felix Onyedike Uzomah. It's time. I think we have all given him and the Chiefs enough time for this. We are heading into the most important year of his career. Because he was a first-round pick, at the end of this upcoming season, you now have the ability to pick up his option or not. We will find out in a year's time from now, is Felix on a four-year deal or a five-year deal? How they feel about Felix and his development so far, that will be answered in how they address defensive end. He told you they're taking a defensive end. Sometimes you got to trust people at what they say and at face value. Hey, we think the running back's the deepest. All right, well, then we're going to take one of them. We don't have a single running back on our team that is under contract for the 2026 season. If you think that D-end is a deep position, you got to take one of them then. Are they taking that position in round one? Because if they're taking them in round one, I would imagine, now I know that the first time it wasn't that case, I don't think you're just continuing to draft defensive linemen and they are on a redshirt plan. I think you are drafting guys in the first round with the expectation that they can help you for this upcoming season. If Felix gets passed over by whoever they drafted his position, that tells me everything I need to know. Or if they are addressing defensive end in the fourth or the fifth round, I think it gives you a glimpse into they feel good about Felix heading into this season. Ask yourself today, where do you expect the pass rush to come from the 2025 Kansas City Chiefs? And while you are answering that question, do you think Felix is a part of that? Because I know Chris Jones is a part of that. I know George Karlaftis is a part of that. I know Charles Omenihu is a part of that. You would have to assume at some point somebody gets injured because that's football. Somebody gets hurt at every position. Somebody gets hurt at running back. Somebody gets hurt at wide receiver. Somebody gets hurt at tight end. Guys get hurt playing football. If you have an injury, and he said that there, one or two injuries will significantly challenge your depth, and they are better prepared to handle an injury at some positions than they are at others. If they lose one of their pass rushers, they are in trouble. You don't have many of them. How they feel about Felix heading into this year, we will know around Saturday how they feel about him. Are they spending a first-round pick on a DN? Are they spending a second-round pick on a DN? Or are they taking a B.J. Thompson type? Are they taking a Joshua Kando, a guy who tested really well, but he's a little bit of a project, and they're willing to see this thing through? I think he is the most important player heading into this draft. He is the player that his standing could change the most in my mind, depending on how they handle this upcoming draft.
So it feels good to get back to this. Whew. Let's talk positional value, because I think how the Chiefs handled D-end has nothing to do with Felix Onyedike Uzomah.
Okay.
Because I don't care how deep it is. I know Brett Veach said it was super deep. I don't care. That is one of the premium positions on the football field. How do you acquire premium players at premium positions, Carrington? With premium draft picks. I know there was this thought that B.J. Thompson could turn into something. He didn't. Joshua Kando could turn into something. He didn't. I know we talked about, the measurables. Remember, Joshua Kando was a five-star high school recruit. They loved talking about that. It didn't turn into nothing in college. It didn't turn anything in the NFL. You need to use a top 64 pick on that position. And if you get production out of Felix, party on. Now you have multiple of them. But I think in the first two rounds, whether it be D-end or D-line in general, maybe it's Walter Nolan, the guy from Ole Miss, the D-tackle, I think they are going to address pass rush early next Thursday. I think we're up at the landing. We're going to be talking about, D-end or D-lineman so-and-so is falling. Keep your eye on the Chiefs, because the same way that we talked about yesterday, you can't cure your wide receiver ills by taking Cornell Powell in the fifth round and hoping it works out because it's a low chance. I feel the same way about D-end. In the first two rounds, you have to take one, and I don't think that has anything to do with Felix. Sometimes you take one at the end of the first round, you get Felix. Sometimes you take one at the end of the first round, you get George Karloftis, who has been a big plus for this team. This is where the Chiefs have to attack with their first two rounds. They have to get more pass rush.
If I had to ask you right now, and I'm trying to find the exact odds for this, and I'm sure they'll pop up at some point. Actually, it's up right now, so I found it. This is how they have it right now on FanDuel if you want to bet on this. They have offensive linemen at even money. You bet a dollar, you win a dollar. If the Chiefs draft an offensive lineman with their first player, they could trade back their first player.
That seems like a sucker bet, by the way, but that's not here nor there.
Number two, they have defensive line or defensive edge, and then they have a big gap. Corner is plus 900. Running back is plus 950. Safety is plus 1,500. Wide receiver is plus 1,600. So if you think they're going opposite of the offensive line or defensive line, there is money to be made if you believe in this. I think the most likely thing that they do is I think they're drafting a defensive lineman. I think what will probably happen is the board's not going to fall exactly how you think it is. Simmons isn't going to be there. One of those offensive linemen isn't going to be there. There's going to be a team that's willing to look past the medicals a little bit because supply and demand. We need a tackle. We're going to take a tackle. I'm thinking, based on what we heard today from Veach, they love this DN class. They think it is a really talented class. And depth at the position doesn't just mean in the third, fourth, or fifth round. It means we think we can get a premium player and we don't necessarily have to draft in the top 10. We think at the low end of the first round, we can get a guy that we really like and test well. If you're asking me today the direction I think they are going to go, I think they are setting it up to go on the offensive or defensive line and attack the line of scrimmage. I think today they are drafting a defensive lineman in round one. Where would you go?
I think it's defensive lineman. I actually think it's defensive lineman's the large umbrella. I actually think it'll be defensive tackle because I think they're a little bit deficient there. And because of what Veach said with the depth of edge, they can maybe use that third round pick to maneuver around in the second round and get an edge. But I think, and I know that FanDuel and DraftKings don't have odds on second round or there's no interest in doing it, I would bet they go D tackle, D end in 1-2. And that's when you see third round running back, maybe a third round wide. Then they start to address that skill position that you talked about. But I think they know as well as I know that pass rush is a premium and Karloftis is due up to be a free agent. Charles Aminihu, Mike Dana, these guys are not long time, like going to be here for a long, long time in Kansas City, at least those two. And behind them, you have Felix, who has not been up to par. And that's it. Like, I know they like Malik Herring over there. Cool. I think they know what I know, which is their edge rush and their pass rush depth is lacking. So I think it's D-line, D-line, whether it's edge and then D-tackle or D-tackle then edge. I think by the time that the Titans pick comes up, they will have adjusted defensive line twice.
All right, let's switch gears just a little bit, and we'll get back to draft coming up momentarily. We'll also be joined by the manager for the Kansas Jayhawks baseball team. Rob is calling them the Omahawks. They got a chance of going to the College Baseball World Series this year. Earlier today, we got the news that there is one final show for Lee Corso. Lee Corso is going to do week one of the college football season, and then he is going to retire. If you have watched the show, I think you've known for quite some time that the end is coming up for Lee Corso, but everybody loves Lee. Kirk Herbstreit absolutely loves him, and that's a big reason why I think Lee has continued to be on the show, despite not having his fastball anymore, so to speak. I think what makes Lee Corso so important and so cool is we obviously all get into this because we love the athletes. Rob gives me a tough time about loving Peter Warwick, and he's one of my favorite college players, or Reggie Bush. Like, you get into this because there was a player that you just gravitated towards and thought that he was amazing. But I also think off the field, and whether it's in the booth or it's commentating it, there are certain people that you associate with a given sport. I am in my mid-30s. And even though John Madden hasn't called an NFL game for almost 20 years now, when I hear the NFL, when I see the NFL, I think of John Madden and Pat Summerall. And there are two people that were very instrumental in helping me become an NFL fan and teaching me the game and being my eyes and ears as you start to understand it and pick this thing up as a hobby. If you like boxing, you think of Larry Merchant, you think of Jim Lampley and those great fights on HBO. If you think of the NBA, you hear Hubie Brown, you hear Doris Burke, you hear Charles Barkley. There are certain people that you associate with the thing and your fandom is synonymous with those people. College basketball, Dick Vitale. If you love college football the way that I love college football, Lee Corso is a major, major part of that. You cannot undersell the importance of College game day. It made college football cool. They do it on location. It's a big deal when they pick your school, your alma mater, your team to be the host of it. I've been to College game day before, so I've seen it. You're excited. There is a level of enthusiasm that you have for it. And then we all wait for the big part of it. It's not just them talking about the games for the day and setting it up and going through what's going to happen in the sport. The show culminates in one moment. The show culminates in whoever the celebrity is, they all make their picks. And yeah, you care about their picks, but ultimately, there's only one pick that you care about. They go around and everybody makes their predictions and you wait for one person's thoughts on the game. And ultimately, it's not just his pick, it's the pageantry of it. It's the show of it. Give me that mascot head. He puts the mascot head on and either everybody boos him because he picks against the home team, or there is a measure of celebration that happens. These are things that you sign up for when you decide that you want to be a sports fan and more specifically a college football fan. I think we've all known that this day is coming for quite some time, and I think that ESPN and College game day have positioned themselves very nicely to move on from Lee Corso, but it's just not going to be the same. The mascot tradition is over in College game day. They cannot do it with anybody else. They cannot replace it. Now, what I do think is going to happen, and I'm perfectly fine with this and I enjoy it, I think that Pat McAfee singing is going to be the new mascot head. You guys know I cheer for Missouri, and I have already envisioned this scenario. I believe that Missouri and Kansas are going to get game day for week two of the college football season. I've already started to look ahead a little bit. Missouri should be ranked. KU should be decent this year. It's the first time they've played in a long time. It's a rivalry game early in the season. Big 12, SEC. It's going to be beautiful in Columbia. There's a lot of reasons to think that that is where game day will be early on in the season. Can you just picture with me, Missouri fans, as they're going around and who knows who will be the celebrity picker? Brad Pitt might be it, or John Hamm might be it. A lot of people could do it. But ultimately, you're waiting for Pat McAfee to start singing Mr. Brightside. And then all the students behind start singing it too as he picks Missouri to beat their rival for the first time since, what, 2007, 2008? Whenever it's been, it'll be a magical time. But I'm going to miss Lee Corso. I imagine it was just his time. It's time to move on from the show. As his health has started to decline a little bit, and his productivity on the show has started to decline a little bit, it was time. I think the show is greatly positioned to move forward. I love the team that they have right now. I like Desmond Howard. I like Reese Davis. I think that Pat McAfee was exactly what this show needed with the energy. Herb Streak's as good as anybody. And I think Nick Saban is really, really good at this. So, Rob, we got the news today that Lee Corso is retiring. He has one more show of College game day left. I know you're a big College game day fan. I am happy that I hope that Corso is going out the way that he wants to. And I know that ESPN and that show, they're going to give him the proper love and respect and send off that he should get as somebody who is very, very important to that show.
I mean, it might sound hyperbolic, but it's not when I say that there is no one more synonymous with college football than Lee Corso, at least for our age. Think about it. Think of all his sayings that, if I just said the saying, you'd be like, oh, that's a Lee Corso thing. Not so fast, my friend. Boy, that dog is ugly. Like, there are little things we can say, and you're like, oh, that's Lee Corso. College game day was started, what, 97, 98? It was not really a thing until Lee Corso and co. made it a thing. The first college football video games, he was the color commentator with all the little finger and the pencil, and it was he was really impactful for an era of college sports, and I do hope that he's going out on his own terms. But what he did for college football is what Dickie V did for college basketball. He will always have a place in that sport. And you're right, the future does look bright without him on that show, but that show just won't feel the same without him, and I hope he gets the proper send-off. I think we as a sports community on September whatever week one is, maybe August 30th, whatever, wherever he's at, I think that will be the most watched game day, and we as a sports-watching community will be sad but happy that he's walking off the show.
I think ultimately the goal of anybody that gets into this or any show that you create is that you want to shape the conversation. Say what you want about First Take, and I understand that some people are not fans of First Take. Some of you are fans of First Take. First Take absolutely shapes the conversation for the day about how we perceive whatever sport that it is, good or bad, for the day. College game day sets you up for a day of college football. It sets you up for the whole day. It sets the tone of it. Inside the NBA, you wait to hear their reaction for things that happen in the NBA because you want to know what Chuck thinks and how he's going to play off Shaq and how Kenny Smith is. College Game Day is one of those shows that has been at the forefront of shaping the college football conversation, and it is going through some necessary changes. That is how life usually works. Coming up on the other side, speaking of college, we're going to head to Lawrence, Kansas to be joined by the manager of the Kansas Jayhawks baseball team. They are 29-10. They got a sold out weekend against K-State. Rob is calling them the Omahawks. We're going to head there next. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Our recruiter's expertise and award-winning AI will find you the skilled candidates you want. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com/talent today.
Be sure to follow The Drive on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. The same way that during college basketball season we adopted a team, we have decided to do that same thing now for college baseball. Baseball America predicts that one of the local schools could potentially go to the College World Series. We're very happy right now to be joined by the head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks baseball program. They are 29-10. Dan Fitzgerald joins us on the show today. Coach, happy to have you on today.
How are you?
What is it like to hear from the outside that there is an appreciation for the work that you guys are doing inside your program?
Yeah, you know, we spend so much time together as a team and try to be so locked in on the process and just going through it day to day and not really getting ahead of ourselves that I think sometimes we're a little, don't necessarily hear the noise outside. And then when you do get the vote of affirmation from somebody, it does feel like, okay, good. I know we feel good about where we're going, but obviously when other people notice, there's part of it that you think, great, that's a great encouragement. And then I think at the same time, man, with college guys, you're always quick to put it in check too and remind them that it's today's about us having a great practice and preparation for a good team this weekend.
For a lot of people, they maybe haven't seen minor league baseball or college baseball. They've just seen the pros. What's different about college baseball? What makes it a very fun and unique game?
Yeah, very different than professional baseball with, you start with the aluminum bats versus wood bats. Certainly a different game. And, that big league baseball is obviously the highest form of the game we were a part of, but very different in that, in the big leagues, the home run, the strikeout, and the walk, the three absolute outcomes of an at-bat are, 75% of at-bats right now. Versus college, you still have a lot of, a lot of things in between. The stolen bases in the big leagues have changed, where teams are stealing more now based off of the fact that you can only pick twice to a base. But the stolen base, for the most part, is still a huge part of college baseball. You know, we play 56 games instead of 162, so there's a little bit more of a sprint to our season versus, you know, in the big leagues, you truly, it is a marathon. So, I think there's a parity in college baseball right now that with the transfer portal and NIL and, all the different aspects of our evolving landscape have created just a lot of parity where anyone can really beat anyone on any given weekend. So it's an exciting game. You know, I think enough people are familiar with it. Throwing on ESPN and watching the College World Series in June. But yeah, it's a great sport. It's rivalry heavy and obviously I love it. I'm pretty biased, but it is a fantastic game.
Right now we're talking to Dan Fitzgerald, who is the head coach at Kansas. He coaches the baseball program. What it seems to me is the community has really rallied around you guys, and KU fans have really rallied around this team that I don't want to say a lot of casual fans, but people who just want to see Kansas athletics do well, that you guys are having a great season. I mean, this weekend, you guys are sold out against K-State. It feels like your fan base has really rallied around this team.
No question. Our home opener, we had a couple huge student groups show up, and they were rowdy and fun and right above our dugout, and we hit a two-run shot in the ninth to tie the game, and we walked it off with a grand slam and in extras. And there was a palpable energy to the ballpark. And the next night, you know, those guys and about 500 others showed up. So we've just had an incredible fan following. And then we've always mixed in with the students. We've always had a ton of families and a ton of people from the community of Lawrence. So I think the influx has been a massive section of the student population, and they've really rallied behind our guys. I think our guys play really hard, and there is a real level of excitement that they've generated with how hard they play. So I think it's been the perfect storm of we've had great weather and some great opponents and some really close games that have probably hooked some people, and the community's really rallied around it.
I think a lot of people know this rivalry between KU and K-State from a basketball and football perspective. How does that energy, how does that intensity carry out to the diamond?
Yeah, you know, I think college athletics are really, they're so rivalry heavy and so rivalry dependent. And you know, you can list off 100 different ones just off the top of your head and what they mean to each fan base. So, you know, I would say that the Sunflower Shootout is important in basketball. It's important in football, but it really, every single time that K-State and Kansas play, it's a really big deal to the people of Kansas and the alumni groups and certainly the student athletes. And I think it's, again, the rivalries are so important to our game, and they unite fan bases and you know, also create that healthy conflict between fan bases. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's another game for us this tomorrow night. And then Saturday and Sunday, it's literally the same baseball game as if we were playing our opening weekend at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. But I do think the excitement inside the ballpark, the sold-out crowds are certainly going to add a great element to the rivalry.
I'll get you out of here with some rapid-fire questions. Let's start with this. Where are you at on Big League Chew? When was the last time you had Big League Chew?
Oh, like 2 weeks ago, I stole some from my kids. They had some in the car before one of their practices, and I grabbed a big chunk of that. Instant sugar rush.
I normally would ask, you know, if you were a basketball coach to, like, tell us the story of, like, when you first dunked on somebody. I don't know if you've ever dunked on somebody, but I'm guessing at some point you hit a home run. Tell us about your first home run.
I have definitely never dunked on anyone. I was a hockey guy and can't dribble with my left hand, so basketball would not have worked. One of my great memories of baseball was when I was a senior in high school, we got to play at Siebert Field, which is the home of the Gophers, and this is old Siebert. And, you know, this is when the Gophers were, you know, in the early to mid-90s when the Gophers were rolling. And I hit a first pitch of the game. Every year it grows about 10, 15 feet in terms of how far it went. But I hit a ball a billion miles out to right on the first pitch of the game, and that's my favorite home run I ever hit.
Who was the baseball players who batting stance you used to mimic the most? Just growing up in Kansas City, I'm not sure if you remember this player or not. They had Mike Aviles, and I just thought his batting stance was the coolest in the world when I was playing wiffle ball. When you were growing up, was there a baseball player you tried to mimic his swing?
Well, I think that's one of the great parts about when we were kids is that you imitated everyone's swing. And I loved Lenny Dykstra. He was such a hard-nosed, gritty guy. I remember trying to hit like him. I think as Twins fan, we all tried, you know, hitting like Chuck Knoblauch at times. I don't know if you remember how you used to lay the bat down and back. And then, you know, there were a bunch of guys during our generation that had the unique stances. And actually, funny story, one of them being Craig Counsell, who Craig's, that would have been more towards, you know, when I was in high school that Craig was in college. He's a few years older than me. But, you know, now, of course, the manager of the Cubs and his son Brady is one of our stud players. So, yeah, I think that's generationally, you know, and you look now at our guys and you got a bunch, you know, someone will hit a home run in a big league game and the next day one of our guys is trying to stand in the box like Shohei Ohtani. So I think that's one of the great, great things of in baseball lore.
And that was Dan Fitzgerald joining us on the show today. He is the manager of the Kansas Jayhawks for the baseball program. They are getting ready for an important series this weekend against Kansas State. The Jayhawks are 28-10 and getting ready for their series against K-State. Coach, it was a lot of fun talking to you. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks, man. Rock chalk.
That is Dan Fitzgerald joining us on the show. Coming up, a little bit of breaking news in baseball. One team has already fired their hitting coach. What does that mean for the Royals? We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.